You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. Whoa, oh, oh, oh. The Punt Podcast, in association with the FWA.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur. I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape Flash? It's unbelievable.
So this is an obvious snap. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One. It's 17 to 10 any time. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
Great, the boss is up for manager of the month. They've been phenomenal. Their odds against. Love it, love it, love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes, listen on Audio Boom, or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
Welcome along to The Punt, everyone. Good to have you with us ahead of the Premier League weekend. We will be talking England later on in this podcast. If the ultimate goal is to score nil, it might be a good time to start practising penalties. And who better to have in charge of that project than Gareth Southgate? Our sports correspondent Carrie Brown offers his insight on Southgate and his mindset. She interviewed Gareth Southgate after both friendlies during the week, and we'll also zero in on Mauricio Pochettino and Arsene Wenger ahead of the North London derby. Pete Farris, Gav Puchlowski and Al Ross give us their best bets in the Football League, and Sam Norris has a European nap as well. But first, it's a warm welcome to the two mainstays on this podcast. First of all, a good afternoon to Derek McGovern. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, chaps. Nice to be back again.
Good afternoon to you, Andy Excel.
Good afternoon.
How are you?
Sucking a little bit. We'll keep going. Old age.
We'll start with the North London derby. We'll start with a big one this weekend. Arsenal versus Spurs is a first up. 12:30 kickoff on Saturday. And the Gunners are 11-8 to win this game. The draw 5-2 with Spurs in the betting at 9-5. Enhanced odds, Alexis Sanchez to score and Arsenal to win was 13-5. That's been enhanced to 3-1. And Harry Kane to score and Spurs to win was 13-5. That's also been enhanced to 3-1. Has the baton now passed Andy Excel? Top North London club. I know you're a big Arsenal fan, but are Spurs the kings of the castle as far as North London are concerned?
Form's temporary, class is permanent. The balance of power has tipped temporarily, but I'm not handing any batons over. they're in great form at the moment, and Arsenal are kind of in the middle of nowhere, if I can put it that way. And they've still got good players. They'll still be up for this game. They're unbeaten at home. Having said that, Harry Kane is like the worst thing that Arsenal ever want to see. So if he plays, that's not good news, and he probably will play. It's a disgrace he didn't turn up for England, in my view, but then that's a different matter. We might come back to that. But no, I can see a draw here.
The draw's in the betting at 5-2. Derek, I'm sure that Dele Alli and Harry Kane in particular will probably make those swift recoveries in time for this North London derby, having not featured in both international friendlies. What's your take on that, first of all, the fact that they've withdrawn and then likely to start at the weekend?
Well, it won't be the first and it won't be the last. I don't blame them. Don't blame them at all. If you can get out of England duty, do it.
Fair enough. As far as this game is concerned, Spurs are unbeaten in their last six North London derbies. That's the longest Arsenal have ever gone without a win against Spurs. But four of those have ended all square. And Andy mentioned Harry Kane there, and he's been a nemesis for Arsenal recently. He's actually scored in all five of his Premier League North London derbies, getting six in total. So he's bound to be a threat if he starts in this game. And I'd imagine that the cash is going to come for Spurs if Kane and Alli do get past it as far as fitness is concerned.
Oh, they will play. They will play, sure. And Harry Kane's a nemesis for Arsenal. He's a nemesis for everybody, isn't he? The way the form is in. Absolutely unbelievable progress in two or three seasons in the Premier League. I had my doubts about him when he first got in. Remember, he couldn't dislodge Emmanuel Adebayo from their Premier League squad. I'm thinking, he can't be that good, this guy. And now look at him now. One of the best in Europe. Fantastic. I tell you what, you mentioned Dele Alli and Harry Kane, but what about Christian Eriksen as well? That performance of his in midweek for Denmark, sensational. And in the midfield, you've got Granit Xhaka versus Christian Eriksen. Xhaka has the name of a block of stone, Granit, and also the movement. And then you've got Eriksen, one of the most dangerous midfielders in Europe right now. I'm looking at Spurs at 9-5, a Dolly Parton bet, if you like, a 9-5. And I'm thinking they're absolute certainties. Andy mentioned Arsenal unbeaten at home. This is who they played at the Emirates in the league this season. Leicester, Bournemouth, West Brom, Brighton and Swansea. I fancy all five of them to go down this season. I mean, it's just a joke. They couldn't possibly not beat them. They played top six rivals, Arsenal, three times so far this season. They've got one goal and 1 point. I think Spurs are absolute certainties.
We talked about this just off air momentarily, Andy, that you thought in the lead up to this match, the book, as far as William Hill is concerned, is going to be taken over by Bets for Spurs.
Yeah, I mean, it's just that it's that feeling in the air, if you like, that the balance of power has tipped, but the prices, do they reflect that at this point in time? So I think the man in the street feeling is, how can Tottenham be second favourite for this game? Mm. And you can see why, because they are the team in better form. But if there's ever a game that Arsenal are going to get up for, it's this one. So, and I don't know, I mentioned the draw before. Another stat there is that there's been 42 North London derbies in Wenger's reign. 18 of them have been drawn, which is 42% of them. So, you know, the draw's the most likely result for me on that basis. And I can see it just being a draw, score draw.
Man in the street, Derek.
Most of that time, Arsenal were great and Spurs were crap. And then Spurs still got draws.
I think it's worked the other way around as well more recently. It just is a leveller, this game. There's never much in it. I mean, you've had some really high-scoring games and some great games. This might be another one. I think the 2-2 or even 3-3 is in play here.
2-2 is 12-1. 3-3 is 40-1 here with William Hill. Let's move on. Manchester United versus Newcastle is next. 5:30 this one. United are 2-7. The draw 4-1. Newcastle 11-1. The enhancements, Romelu Lukaku to score and Manchester United to win 2-0, 2-1 or 3-1, was 7-2. That's been enhanced to 4-1. And Yosselu to score and Newcastle to win was 20-1. That's been enhanced to 33-1. Remember, this game is hashtag your odds as well with William Hill, as all the Premier League matches are this weekend. So if you want your bet on the William Hill website, just tweet using the hashtag your odds to @WilliamHill. And Manchester United, Derek, are now 8 points behind Manchester City following their loss a couple of weeks ago at Stamford Bridge. And people are seriously starting to question whether Jose Mourinho is the man for the job at Manchester United. And I was listening to a podcast with Jonathan Wilson. It was the Football Weekly podcast with The Guardian. And he was saying that basically Mourinho's built his career on pragmatism and he's worn that badge with honour and pride throughout his career. But it's not pragmatic to be relentlessly negative when City are so positive now. And the only way to bridge that deficit is if they play with a bit more dynamism. But I don't think it's going to happen. I think it will be negativity, negativity, negativity for Manchester United.
Well, too right it will with that manager. But is anybody surprised, though? You know, this is a guy who, in how long he's been here, I don't know how long now, he's made Marouane Fellaini, the plodder, the most important man at Man United. That's how bad things are there. And it's quite incredible that if you were to name two teams over the last, in Europe, this is, over the last, 30 years, who symbolised flair and cavalier attitude, it would be Man United and Real Madrid, but possibly Barcelona as well, throw them in. And, well, Mourinho's managed two of those sides. Mourinho, the arch-pragmatist. It's quite incredible. And it does make you wonder sometimes about the people who run football, who make the big decisions in football, to actually employ this guy as Man United manager and before that, Madrid manager. We saw what he did at Chelsea. We saw what he did at Inter Milan, how he wins games. This is not football United or Real Madrid should be associated with. I can't. They're unwatchable right now, United. Most new United fans are saying exactly the same. Yeah. How has he been brought to that?
It is incredible the way they're playing and the style in which they're playing. I don't know if he thinks he's not got the personnel to play attractive football, Derek, but he's going up against another man that's managed Real Madrid in his past. And Rafa Benitez, there's no love lost between these two managers, let's put it that way.
No, not many games lost as well for Mourinho, is it, generally? No, it is. This is Mourinho versus Rafa, which could only be bettered by Fergie v Rafa, which could only be bettered by Rocket Gibraltar team versus Fergie in my eyes. It's just great. I mean, what happens on the touchline is going to be far more interesting than what happens on the pitch. The two of them hate each other, going back to the ghost goal, of course. And yeah, in fact, and one thing I meant to say in this podcast, whenever we've talked about Marino, going back to that match, you know, the phantom goal, which was way over the line, by the way. That was the night, I don't know if I told you this before, that was the night I realised Marino was a myth. We were losing 1-0 at Anfield in the second leg. They only needed to score and they were through as the game ticked on. He continued playing Claude Makélélé. Liverpool were camped out in their own box for about 45 minutes of that game. He continued playing Claude Makélélé, a holding midfield player, right till the 90 minutes. Every time Makélélé got the ball, as a Liverpool fan, I was sitting back smoking a fag. He left Good Johnson on the touchline until about 5 minutes to go. And when, as soon as he come on, it was panic stations for Liverpool. I thought that night, this guy is a myth. And nothing he's done since then has made me change my mind. Going back to Rafa, he is a god, an absolute god. He could be the first manager in Premier League history to win at Old Trafford with three different away clubs. He's won there with Chelsea and Liverpool, obviously. He could do it with Newcastle. And you know what? 11-1 Newcastle. If this is going to be a low-scoring affair, Newcastle are going to play, you know, they're going to play cages. They're not going to come out at United. But United aren't going to do the same either. You know, they just can't under this manager. I'm guessing that it's going to be a very, very low-scoring game. But I'm going to go for Newcastle with a goal start here. 11-1 almost tempts me, but I just think Rafa's ambition might be limited. But Newcastle with a goal start, a long odds against, I'm definitely on that.
13-5 Newcastle plus one in the game. If you're looking at it being low scoring, Newcastle 1-0 is 20-1. Manchester United to win 1-0 is in the market at 5-1 here with William Hill. And at Manchester United lacking in firepower at the moment as well. Romelu Lukaku, after that amazing start to the season, has gone 7 without scoring. Has a good record against Newcastle, but that's a concern coming in, Andy.
Well, yeah, as Mourinho warned him down the same as he has everybody else. Like you say, it's more torturous being a United fan at the moment than even being an Arsenal fan. it's just like you don't want to watch it. It's like a horrible thing happening. I haven't got a great view on the game. I think United will probably do the same as they've done and win ugly and grind it down. So the half-time, full-time draw and then United, if you fancy United. Mm. I agree with Derek. I don't rule Newcastle out completely, and I was looking at the draw no better, which is a decent price. So, you know, you can... I think that was about 8-1.
It is 8-1, yeah.
So, you know, can't rule it out, because in a low-scoring game, it only takes one, possibly. And I just don't see United scoring loads. If they do, they'll just grind them down in their normal way and everybody would have switched off by the time it happens.
Draw half-time, Manchester United full-time, by the way, is available at 14-5.
It's the Rome derby on Saturday night in Serie A, and this could be a real cracker with both sides arriving here full of confidence and winning games with regularity. It's 6 straight league wins for visiting Lazio, whilst Roma have won their last 4 games in Serie A. The home side have built from the back this season and have already kept 7 clean sheets in Serie A this term, but I think it will be nigh on impossible for them to keep out a free-scoring Lazio side in this one. Lazio games have been the place to be for goals in Italy this season, with their games averaging a league-high 3.91 goals. They've scored 31 times already this season. Only Napoli and Juve have managed more, and they've got on the score sheet in every single league fixture since an opening day 0-0 draw. A man who has scored a large portion of these goals so far is Ciro Immobile. He's the top scorer in Serie A this season with 14 goals to his name in the competition and averages a goal every 70 minutes. He's usually long odds on to register, but against better opposition this week, he's attempting 11-10 to score any time. That will do for a bet for me. He's also the penalty taker and has converted 3 times from the spot already this season, which could well be crucial in a spicy local derby.
Now, on to Sunday's televised game, which is Watford versus West Ham at Vicarage Road. And the kickoff is 4 p.m. and Watford are slight odds against at time of recording, 21-20 to win the game. The draw 12-5 with West Ham 13-5. The enhanced odds, Andre Gray to score and Watford to win, was 5-2. That's been enhanced to 3-1. And Javier Hernandez to score and West Ham to win was 9-2. That's been pushed out to 6-1. Following Watford's win against Arsenal, which came about a month ago now, Marco Silva was anointed as the saviour of football management, Andy. And we've talked about him in glowing terms on this podcast as well. But that win has been followed by three straight defeats against Chelsea, against Stoke and against Everton. And that one against Everton was highly embarrassing as well. 2-0 up and beaten 3-2. The fortunate thing for Watford is they've got West Ham on deck.
Well, yeah. And again, it's, we just talked about Mourinho and that appointment. How does Moyes, how's that a fit for West Ham? They want to play football and win games. David Moyes. I just don't, you know, how many times does somebody have to fall that far before they fall out of sight, basically? And I just don't see it for West Ham. Watford are just really frustrating at the moment because they should be winning and they're not. I mean, they are actually still overperforming over the whole season's work. And, you know, I just think Moyes is just going to set up not to lose this. And I think West Ham will fall out with him as quickly as Man United have fallen out with Mourinho. But probably a low-scoring draw here.
The draw 12-5. If you fancy a low-scoring draw, do have a look at draw and under 2.5 goals, which is available at 100-30. West Ham, that defeat against Liverpool was apparently, Derek, the straw that broke the camel's back. But make no mistake about this, David Moyes was waiting in the wings. He was Slaven Bilic's grim reaper. And his appointment has been met with apathy by most West Ham fans. And as Andy just mentioned, how many times does a man have to fail? He's like Alan Kirbishley Mark II, this man. How many chances does he have to get? He's not been successful in his last three managerial positions. In fact, when he was in charge of Sunderland, albeit many people thought they were a sinking ship, he only won 8 of his 43 games in charge in all competitions. That is just abysmal managerial nous that Moyes has shown, Derek.
It is. And, you know, pretty soon we'll be getting Steve McLaren or Peter Reid taking over at Everton, given that kind of, you know, appointment. It's the worst appointment since that American couple hired Rebecca De Mornay to be the nanny. Remember in that Hand That Rocks the Cradle? I think Moyes only got the West Ham job after Rebecca turned it down. It's an absolutely diabolical appointment. West Ham see David Moyes as the man to take them forward. Just not for 90 minutes on a Saturday or a Sunday, I think. I reckon we could hear Moyes out chance even before his first game. I really do. And that's just from the players. It's just a diabolical appointment. They're playing at a stadium now that was host to the Olympics, an event, obviously, that comes around once every 4 years. Under Moyes, so does a win. I think Watford are certainties here. They're 21-20, and it's a good point that Andy makes, that they've lost three games. You know, everything was great about them, but they've lost three games. One was against Chelsea, who they outplayed for most of that. I can't remember the other game. Everton last week or a fortnight ago. You know, they should never have lost that game. I know they did, but it was 2-0 up. And even when Everton went 3-2 up, they had a chance to equalise right at the end. They should have won that game. I just think they've had a little bit of bad luck. And they're meeting, basically, the 3 points are there for the taking in this game. In fact, nowadays, there's moves afoot that if you beat West Ham, you only get 2 points because it doesn't really count as a win. Watford are 21-20 of certainties. Get on.
On to Brighton versus Stoke next then, chaps. Last game this weekend that's televised. Brighton are 7-5 to win it. The draw 21-10. With Stoke in the betting at 21-10. Glenn Murray to score and Brighton to win was 11-4. That's been enhanced to 100-30. And Jerdan Shaqiri to score and Stoke to win was 5-1. That has been enhanced to 7-1. Glenn Murray, by the way, has scored in three successive Premier League games. That's the first time he's managed that since April 2015. And Brighton, Derek, up to eighth in the league now going into this weekend, following that win away from home against Swansea a fortnight ago. They're now unbeaten in four and have only conceded 2 goals in the process as well. And Stoke also come into this game in reasonable form, Derek. So it might be an entertaining finish to the weekend, perhaps.
I can't see that somehow. Brighton have done nothing wrong. I watch them, and what I see from them is an unbelievably well-organised team.
Yeah.
No superstars, but then every player knows what they're doing, and they're capable of giving everybody a game. You know, they're not going to get mullered by anybody, Brighton. The manager there has done a fantastic job. And by the way, with them doing so well, Huddersfield doing so well, and Newcastle even too, what does that tell you about this Premier League being the greatest in Europe when three teams come up from the Championship? And, you know, I just taking it by storm, really. Yeah. You know, it's, what does it say for the Premier League? Not much. I like Brighton here, 7-5. I mean, I've seen enough of Stoke this season to know I'm not going to be backing them unless they're around 5-1, 6-1. They're a long way short of that. They're beatable right now. And, you know, I think Brighton are a better side. I actually do. I'm not saying a great bet at 7-5, but if it compares favourably to Stoke at 21-10, then again, everything compares favourably to Stoke. I would go for Brighton here. I just think they're a better side, and I think it's going to be a low-scoring Brighton victory.
Brighton to win the game and under 2.5 goals in the match is available at 3-1, which could look tasty. And I think you echo Derek's sentiments.
Yeah, I like Brighton. They're decent. As Derek said it already, well organised. They do the right things. No known superstars. I think Lewis Dunk at the back is a player that people are going to get to know a lot more about. He looks a very good player. If these were two equal teams, then the home team should be 11-10 or 6-5. And so they're telling me that Stoke are better than Brighton. I would beg to differ. Mm. I'm pretty anti-Stoke and have been all season. I think Mark Hughes is not likely to still be there at the end of the season for me. It's difficult to have a bet on him to be next manager to go, which is around 14-1. But because, you know, there's vacant positions at the moment, so somebody could get moved around in the jumble.
Yeah.
But I can't see him being there much longer. It's going in the wrong direction. So I've got to be with Brighton in this game as well.
So the week before the international break, Andy, Pete, Gav, Al and the Euro boys all had winning naps. Normal service was resumed though last week, with only Derek showing any international class, with Ukraine winning at 21-20. In fact, two of Derek McGovern's three winners this season have been on international breaks, so after 15 years, it seems we've finally found his betting niche. The top three looks like this. Dave Kellner's on £18.43 profit, Pete Farris minus £1, Derek McGovern in third, minus £23.75.
Now, chaps, let's get to the nap selections. Andy, you had a good winner the last time I was on the podcast with Burnley to beat Southampton at 9-2. Are you giving us another good winner this week, hopefully?
Well, I'm going to go with the North London Derby draw.
Appalled, that off me.
Appalled. Have I nicked it off you? You left me Burnley last time as well. you're about as deadly in front of goal as Shane Long.
Get rid of this Premier League.
Yeah, is there any chance of this is the bread and butter here, Derek. Is there any chance?
I know. It's a tough set of fixtures, this. I mean, I'm looking at... I wish you wouldn't have seen Huddersfield the other week at Anfield, because they were diabolical. And I want to oppose them all the time. And it cost me a few bob last time out. And I noticed that Bournemouth are only 10-11 to beat them at the weekend. I can't go for that. Mm. Even though I think Huddersfield are awful. I'm not backing Huddersfield at 10, Bournemouth at 10-11. Tough one, this. I'm going to go for Burnley 11-10 to win at home to Swansea.
Burnley 11-10 goes in with the draw in Arsenal versus Spurs. There are some good 3 p.m. fixtures this weekend, and I'm going to go with Manchester City to win, but both teams to score in the match 8-5 as my bet. I think City will continue their tear, but Leicester have definitely enough on the counter to hurt this City side, in my opinion. And I think they've won there. I think they've won against Manchester City at home two of the last 3 years as well. So I'm going with City to edge it, but both teams to score in the match at 8-5. And that treble, the draw in the North London Derby at 5-2, is Andy's pick. Derek going with Burnley at 11-10 at home against Swansea. And I'm going Man City
now,
to win,
William
and both
Hill,
teams
you can
to score
get
8-5. And that treble this weekend pays 18.11-1.
That's not on the app. Just tweet with the hashtag YourOdds to @WilliamHill, and the traders will try to price it up. Hashtag YourOdds from William Hill.
I'm delighted now to be joined on the line by our FWA guest this week. Carrie Brown is standing by, a sports correspondent who's been covering some major events over the past few years, including the Olympics, World Cups, the Champions League and the Premier League. Derek is back with us again. But first of all, it's a warm welcome to the podcast to you, Carrie. How are you?
Very well, thank you. It's been an interesting week of football, let's say, with the internationals, and plenty learnt, I think.
Yeah, it certainly has. There'll be plenty of people breathing a bit of a sigh of relief, if you like, after the international break. Or certainly social media will tell you that people are pleased that the international break's over. But 186,000 people at Wembley over the two England internationals. Nil-nil draws with certainly the two best ranked teams in the world, Germany and Brazil. Positives to be taken. Youth has been blooded. Is it a bit of a myth that people sort of hate international football?
I think I know it's a frustrating time, and I've had a little bit of a row, not accidentally on Twitter, because coming back at the end of the evening after when we'd seen some youth really excel, everyone talking and groaning about the Premier League being interrupted rather frustrated me, because everyone will be behind and jumping on the bandwagon come the World Cup. I think the problem is the way that these international breaks are staggered. They really break up the Premier League window at this time of year. And if you really want to see your team really getting going, if you're a Manchester City fan, if you're a Chelsea fan watching your team try and get back in that battle, you want that consistency, and you miss that every weekend, week out drama that we get to have when you've got an England side with lots of those star names pulling out. So you can understand the frustration for the fans that are watching their teams battling out in a title race. We can't forget what this is for, and we will all be hoping and expecting by the time the World Cup comes around.
Yeah, absolutely. Derek, we've played a couple of friendlies against some good sides. It is always going to be hard to motivate the people for non-competitive football, but there were positives to be taken. Are you a little bit of a fan of the international break? I wouldn't say a fan as such, but do you think it's overplayed how frustrating it is?
No, I don't. No, you mentioned 186,000 at Wembley for the two internationals, but the opera and the ballet is always full. It doesn't mean they're any good. I mean, I wish someone would put international football out of our misery. I mean, when was the last enjoyable World Cup? 1994 in my eyes, and that was only because of Diana Ross's missed penalty. Before that, you have to go back to 1978 for a decent one. The one thing in common with those two World Cups is that England were at neither. And if you watch England in those two games, you understand why people are fed up with them. In my eyes, they were outclassed in both, and we're supposed to be doing whoopee-doo because they got 0-0 draws in friendlies. People are saying we've got a chance in the World Cup because we've helped Brazil and Germany in friendlies. Well, would you back a team to win the Premier League because they had a good performance in the Community Shield? No, you wouldn't. It's absolutely madness. And this is the worst England team I have ever seen, and I've seen some bad ones. Internationals are massively overrated, especially the ones in the England side.
Okay. No, fair enough. So you're not even a fan of them when the big tournaments come around?
When the big tournaments come around, I root for whoever is playing England.
Carrie, just to go back to a point that you touched on with some major players withdrawing from the squad, particularly those of a Tottenham Hotspur persuasion. We'll get on to the North London Derby in a little bit. They've obviously got a massive game coming up this weekend, club football, but Harry Kane, Dele Alli, Harry Winks, all pulling out of the squad, all have trained this week, all seemingly on course to start in that London Derby and the North London Derby at the weekend. How damaging is that potentially to the game if we have players who seemingly aren't interested about playing for England in these friendlies when they've got a big club fixture at the weekend?
I think you could say that potentially if these weren't England regulars, if they weren't players that had gone through the pain barrier for England in the past. I think Harry Kane, Dele Alli and Harry coming through desperately want to be playing for England. There's definitely a commitment to England with Tottenham. I don't think you can disagree with that, and I think at this time they're still not declared fully fit for this. They're still touch and go on today's training sessions, so I think it's a little unfair to say that they would. We know what Harry's been managing, we know what he's been carrying. I think the argument might have been from Pochettino, let's preserve the players because then at the end of the season there's a tournament to be played, and we need these players fit for a duration, and you can't disagree with that, can you?
No, I think that's fair enough. And of course, with these high-profile names missing out, it's given a chance for some of the youngsters to come in. This is something that Gareth Southgate's been particularly keen on since his time in charge. I know you've spoken to Gareth Southgate after a few of the games, Carrie. How important is it to him to blood these youngsters?
It is important. I mean, with that counter to Tottenham, the succession of names that dropped out going into that match against Germany was, I mean, it was embarrassing. My emails were pinging, embargoed email from St George's Park from the FA, and you were like, who now? Oh, no. I mean, I'm just not going to update my Twitter profile because we're showing this match on our channel, Being Sports, and I really want to sell it. And I'm sorry for what I said when I saw the team sheets that came out, because I literally thought it was going to be 4-1 to Germany for the first match. I think they had more than 100, or maybe just shy. I mean, it looked in the hundreds of caps of experience that we didn't have. I think there were only two or three players starting for England that played in our last World Cup qualifier. It was really looking quite bleak. And I don't think Gareth Southgate, he couldn't really hide that in my post-match interview after two friendlies. He did say, you know, look, we lost a lot of senior players, more than he accounted for. But what it did give was a tremendous opportunity, six debuts. Remarkably, it's now 12 debuts that Gareth Southgate has given to players in 2017. Is he a bit of our Pochettino for England that we've had producing debutants for us at a club level? It has brought in some positivity. But then afterwards, Gareth Southgate did say to me, and I was a bit mean to say to him, this is great and they've proved what they can do. And you see Joe Gomez that he worked with at the under 17. So he's known for a long time, his capabilities. They've got to do it at club level. Now, he was very careful and took a second to choose his words. But his words are that these players have created evidence, and I'm sure that they'll go back to their clubs and the clubs will be proud of what they've achieved and give them evidence of what they can do against world-class players. He's not hiding exactly what he's saying there. Back them after this. They've proven it. Give them more chances. But will they be given them? You can only hope.
One final point on this one then for you, Carrie, regarding the international football over the past couple of games. And Derek makes a fair point. There'll be plenty of people who aren't taking a great deal of positives from two goalless draws, albeit against fairly decent opposition. Should we be taking the positives from these games, or should we be expecting more? Should we be expecting goals from this England side?
Okay, my caveat is I'm a champion of youth, and I really appreciate the courage for managers to do what Gareth Southgate did that night against Germany. That was ballsy. It really was. They could have been absolutely hammered 4-1, and the idea of playing at Wembley for those players and at a senior level could have been crushed, and it could have been, you know, that golden generation that we had again, that just fear going out and don't want to go and play for their country. It didn't. It turned out quite well, didn't it? So I will always back those that have the courage, like Pochettino, that put on those young players in those big encounters where, you know, their neck is on the line. But I agree with you. And when we were there, the expectations for England in this World Cup are very low. But they got a little higher. But there's no doubting the belief among the media team that I work within is that pretty much England were going out in the group stage of this World Cup. Whatever the draw is that we have in Moscow at the end of this month, I mean, it's very much we haven't got this strong belief in this side. We measured that up maybe to getting to a knockout stage after this. We're not doubting ourselves. But what I will say is when we come to the next Euros, where I believe the final might just be being held in England at Wembley, isn't that where we should be looking to?
Yeah, very most definitely food for thought there. We'll move on to some of the Premier League action this weekend. Obviously, the Northland Derby is the early kickoff on the Saturday. We'll get more insight from Carrie as well, because I know, Carrie, you've filmed and produced a documentary on Pochettino, so we'll get a little bit more on Pochettino in a few moments. Derek, we'll start with you here. I know you've offered your thoughts on the North London Derby from a betting perspective a little bit earlier on in the podcast, but it's interesting how much the power, if you like, has shifted in this North London Derby. Certainly for the majority or the entirety of my life, Arsenal have always been warm favourites for this derby. Nowadays, Spurs are much more the side people are interested in. They've got the exciting players. We mentioned Pochettino there is a real champion of English youth talent at the moment. And it's interesting to see that Spurs are now the force we reckon with in North London, whereas it's been Arsenal for many years.
Yeah, which makes it a bit surprised that the outsiders for this game, Arsenal are favourites, and I'm trying to understand why. Even when Arsenal were great and Spurs were pretty useless, Arsenal had trouble beating them. And the balance of power has shifted, and it will stay with Spurs now in my eyes. I can't see Arsenal coming back for a long time, certainly not until they get rid of Wenger, who, dear me, how... I look as a Liverpool fan, I look at what he's done over the last, 10 years, and I wonder how he is still in a job when he's done that. I mean, before last year's FA Cup final win, Arsenal had won one FA Cup more than Portsmouth in the last 10 years, and Arsene Wenger still manager of Arsenal. Unbelievable, really. Pochettino is probably, he takes you back to Wenger in his early years at Arsenal. He's been a breath of fresh air. And you can only see, I mean, Harry Kane's progress in the last couple of years is unbelievable. Now, how much of that credit does Pochettino deserve? I mean, he was a centre half. I'm instinctively thinking, how can he teach a centre forward how to play football? But surely he's got to take some credit, because that is the most improved player I've ever seen in a couple of years.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair point. And he's bringing through, obviously, the likes of Dele Alli and Eric Dier, and not just the English talent as well, which we tend to focus a little bit more on, bringing through a real good crop of players. Carrie, you've obviously spent a little bit of time with the man filming this documentary. What's he like as a person? We sort of look in from the outside in a little bit of awe at the man and the job he's done, some of the points Derek alluded to there.
I've been quite lucky, actually, that I've very, very lucky being sports who I work for, one of the biggest sports channels in France. They were the host, one of the host broadcasters of the Euros. So you would have watched England's internationals on beIN Sports over in France. And because of that, we also have a really good relationship with Arsene Wenger. He's one of our people that we bring into the studio to give his point of view. And we also get to sit down with him. So I know both men. I'm quite lucky to have spent quite a bit of time talking to both of them, and what they both have are very clear ideas of how they want to do everything they do, and there's a certain stubbornness of both of them, but they're both very amiable, absolute gentlemen, and very, very I have an excellent relationship with both of them. What Pochettino has done with his players and what he has done with that group of players is quite remarkable. I think what I would like to see from Arsenal more than I see, which I don't see at Arsenal, but I see at Tottenham, is the quick thinking mentality that Pochettino has instilled in his players, the tactical acumen to change things on the cuff. And I think that's what you're lacking from Arsenal. Yes, Arsene Wenger did change things up with a back three, and it was courageous to do so against Manchester City and Chelsea in those in the FA Cup semi-final and final last year, and that was refreshing to see. But I think with Tottenham, you have players that are more mentally astute. You don't have those moments where they're not all clicking with each other and looking to each other. You know, those embarrassing scenes with Sanchez in the Champions League last season, where he was just willing his players that just on the pitch of him that lacked ideas. And I think that's the contrast between those two, the mental intelligence on the ball, the way they communicate, the quick thinking, the adaptability to tactics. And I think that's where Arsenal are just lacking at the moment.
Yeah, it's an interesting point you make as well, of course. You mentioned there the bravery of Arsene Wenger to try and switch things up. But in general, he's got a very specific idea about the game, a very specific way that in which he wants his players to play, and we've seen that over the course of his tenure at Arsenal. Has his outlook ever changed sort of over the years, and now that we are talking about this power shift in North London, now that Spurs are becoming much more the powerhouse in that area of the country, is there anything Wenger's doing to try and adapt? It seems to me that he's not stuck in his ways as such, but still has a very specific and clear idea of the way that he wants to play football. And it's just not working as well as Pochettino and Spurs at the moment.
No, he changed to that back three, and it certainly seemed to be developing. Given more time to develop, you hope more, but it doesn't seem to have moved on from that. Whereas if you look at Pochettino and just take two matches back-to-back with each other. If you look at that Real Madrid match at the Bernabeu where he was struggling, he suddenly brought in two strikers, Llorente alongside Harry Kane. Then the very next match against Liverpool, you're looking at the team sheet again and working out what on earth is he doing. He's got central midfielders without a natural ball winner. And then we absolutely saw what he was doing, playing Liverpool at their own game to, you know, an excellent performance and the result he needed on both encounters. And you just don't feel you have that with Arsenal. But then you've got a question again, another thing. You've got the players and the commitment of the players. You've got this remarkable situation with Tottenham in which Dele Alli and Harry Kane stayed when we know that big clubs would have liked to prize them away, especially when they were going back to a stadium at Wembley where they were getting crushed consistently and many believed it was a curse that the team wouldn't perform on. Whereas in contrast, you've got two of the biggest stars in the Arsenal camp wanting away. And then you wonder how much you can develop more tactics if you haven't got that cohesion in a squad. And isn't that always the question at the moment with Ozil, with Sanchez? Are they going to perform on the day? And I think another blow is not having Giroud, because he's a bit of a superstar. He's only really scored once, I think, this season. But he does bring some positivity off the bench. I think they might miss that this weekend.
Indeed. And just one more final point on this. Maurizio Pochettino mentioned the documentary a little bit earlier on. Obviously, you spent a little bit of time with him. What's the man Pochettino like?
Very amenable. I think anyone that's had the pleasure to work with him will know that. He's incredibly natural. The most normal manager I've met ever in the Premier League. I think that's fair enough to say. Incredibly human, very down to earth, doesn't change that as under pressure as he becomes. And that's what allowed me to do the documentary. I think I sat with one of two broadcasters, the South American broadcaster, that sat down with him in his first season in the Premier League, and he really impressed me with what he was saying, and I told the club so, and therefore since then we've had a communication about what he's doing and the progress he's had with youth. And there is a very human aspect, and it's a human aspect that I think he emboldens in the club. He wants it to be a family with his players, and you can see that the attention to detail at the Spurs training ground is remarkable. There's a pitch and putt as you go in for the players, and it's astounding. They're building a hotel there. It's this luxury development, whereas before in Spurs Lodge they had a porter cabin, and you could just about find one place that you could sit and squeeze and find an area you could interview a player. What they're making this do is making Tottenham a destination that the families want to be at, that these players want to be at, and a connection with a manager. And Danny Rose has somewhat hurt my documentary because he very much made up the backbone of it, of the way he said that Pochettino came in and sat him down and said he'd get him to play for England. Then he was very much happy to say that Pochettino saved my career. Now he's backtracked on that a little bit in that interview he famously did. But he does give players enormous confidence. The door is always open in his room. He talks to people one-on-one, and there's a very strong connection with the players there, and it's that family, that community, that down-to-earth nature. And it's not just the reporters that he works and has that connection with on that one-to-one level. I know it's all the way down to the lady in the canteen. He has a one-on-one connection. I don't know how he has any energy in the day, because he really takes time to get to know and have an impression on anyone, and that's certainly paying off in the team.
Okay, one final point on this one then from you, Derek, just to go back to an Arsenal perspective. Is it as simple as changing the manager? Obviously, you're a clear advocate of Arsene Wenger out. If they bring in someone like Diego Simeone, for example, or has more got to be done at Arsenal? Is it the attitude of the likes of Ozil and Sanchez at times this season? Is it as simple as changing the manager to try and bridge this gap that Spurs have now sort of developed from Arsenal?
Well, changing the manager is not going to be a magic wand. We've seen that in so many other clubs. But it's going to give Arsenal a better chance after sure, because while Wenger's still there, they're just going to be playing the same old Wenger way, which is past its sell-by date, long past its sell-by date. If I was taking charge of Arsenal now, and I'll tell you what, if I was taking charge of Arsenal, I wouldn't do as bad a job as Wenger's doing right now. The first two players I would bomb out would be Sanchez and Ozil. I wouldn't care what it would cost the club. Okay, the board would go mad. But those two players are bringing Arsenal down this season. They're not trying a leg. They're not interested. Why on earth are they anywhere near the first team?
So it's more than Arsene Wenger then. Arsenal are in
serious trouble. Yeah, but it's clear to amateurs like me what's wrong with Arsenal. Get rid of those two. And Wenger as well. You get rid of those three players, probably the three highest paid employees, maybe even in the Premier League, I don't know. Get rid of those three. You'll see a different Arsenal.
Okay. No chance of them in the North London Derby this weekend then, Derek?
Spurs are certainties, 9-5, absolute certainties.
Hi, my name's Pete Farries, looking at the Championship, and this weekend could be a weekend of away teams and big prices. For example, Bristol City, 5-2, away from home against Sheffield Wednesday. Are they value? Brentford have really found some form of late, 9-4, away at Cardiff. Are Forest interesting at 9-5 at Birmingham? Of side, of course, aren't looking their best. Hull are in real trouble, and at Ipswich value, therefore, at 12-5. It could be a weekend where big prices are your friend. And I think, to be honest, in the evening kickoff, where my nap is, that could be the case again. Derby are 21-10, having won their last two away games, having won four of their last five games, and admittedly the last time out they lost at home 4-2 to Reading. But they're playing a Fulham side who've not won any of their last five games, that's no victory since September. A side who haven't scored in either of their last two games against very good sides, admittedly, in Bristol City and Wolves, but a side who look ultimately devoid of confidence. Derby will be trying to remedy what was a dreadful result against Reading, and therefore for me, Derby at 21-10 are a huge price, but my nap, I'll take some safety. So my nap will be 5-4, draw no bet, Derby County. So that's the Championship. Let's go to Gav Pushilovsky for League One.
Now, admittedly, this may not be the best start to sell a NAP selection in League One, but the team I'm picking this weekend have lost their last four games straight. They've lost at home in the Secretary Trophy, they lost away in the FA Cup, they lost at home in the Secretary Trophy, and they lost away at Scunthorpe last time out. But their home form is pretty good, and that's where they are taking on Wimbledon. My NAP selection is Bristol Rovers at 21-20 to win at home to Wimbledon. Bristol Rovers have won three of the last four games at home, and they've scored three against Blackpool, two against Plymouth, two against MK Dons, and lost at home to Oldham by 3-2. Normally, as a rule, if you go to Bristol Rovers and want to get something from the game, get your shooting boots on. You're going to have to score two or three to walk away with a point at least. And Wimbledon away from home, well, they've scored just 2 goals in 5 games on their travels. And this is a stat attack time. Since Wimbledon came into the Football League, they have played Bristol Rovers 10 times. And of those 10 games, 7 have been victorious for Bristol Rovers, only 1 victory for Wimbledon, and 5 games have taken place at Bristol Rovers, and Bristol Rovers have won 5 out of 5 at home to Wimbledon. I'm going to be saying 6 out of 6 this weekend. My NAP selection for League One is Bristol Rovers at 21-20 at home to Wimbledon. Looking at League Two, here's Al Ross.
With last week's draw, Mindfield, 6 of the 12 games ending level, I'm sidestepping the draw specialist, so instead let's talk about Crewe. On their first away trip of the season, they went to Port Vale. Port Vale had a man sent off after half an hour. Crewe won 1-0. That remains the only time this season they've picked up even a point on the road. Their record since, 6 league matches, 1 trophy match, that's 7 games, 7 defeats, scoring 5, conceding 17. Last week's capitulation at home to Lincoln adds fuel to the argument this is not a team with a strong backbone. 1-0 up after 8 minutes, they conceded the equaliser on 54 and proceeded to lose 4-1. It might seem crazy to back a team who are the favourites despite being below Crewe in the table, but I am backing Forest Green Rovers. Crewe have 17 points, none of which have come away from home since the opening day. Forest Green have 16 points, but they only had 6 from their opening 13 league games. Their other 10 have all come from the last 4. Add in an FA Cup win over Macclesfield and ignore the kids losing to Swansea in the trophy. That makes 4 wins and a draw in the last 5, and it includes victories over Coventry and Stevenage. Now, banking on Forest Green might seem unsafe, but backing against Crewe away rarely is. Christian Deutsch with 3 goals in 4 is worth a nibble at 2-1 in the first or last scorer market, as FGR are a low-scoring team. But the NAP this week is a Forest Green side who should be odds on, but are actually priced at 13-10.
That is your lot for the Punt Podcast. Thank you to everyone that's contributed, and most of all, thanks to you for listening. Make sure you check out this podcast via audioboom.com. To access it weekly, just type in The Punt, and it is available in the usual podcast places as well. To check out all the latest odds here with William Hill, go to sports.williamhill.com. Check them out on the app as well if you wish to do so. And if you're having a bet this weekend, the very best of luck.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.